Previously on the Ron Van Dam Show.
I don't even know what my toes look like. Guys don't really care about that stuff. They said they were having a good time. We will stand out on the lawn on Saturday and wait for the spacecraft to take us to the other planet. You're welcome.
And now, today's episode.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Thank you. Hold your applause.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Oh, thank you. Oh, please sit down. Oh, thank you. Please sit down, please. Hey, come back here. I've learned there's a difference between standing and applauding and standing and walking out. It's not much of a difference. Welcome to the program. I am Ron Van Dam. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. This is going to be interesting. Well, all it takes to have a successful show is you and me. So we're halfway there. Welcome. Relax. Come on, I'm not going to hurt you much. Hey, I'll remind you, it's trash day. It's trash day. Don't forget to put your spouse out on the curb. That's a joke. Don't really do it. Oh, my God, don't do it. Oh, no, I'm just kidding. That was a joke. It was a funny, hilarious joke. Don't actually. Oh, my God. I'm so sorry. Do you recycle? I don't. I don't cycle and then do it again. I don't really care about recycling, to be honest with you. I care and I don't care, and I'll tell you why. Because we're a bunch of idiots anyway. We've already charted our demise. So why save a bottle? I don't understand that. Do you remember when recycling began back in 1827? When Moses crossed the Delaware? I think I'm confusing a lot of historical facts here. Was it Moses who got shot in the theater, or was it Lincoln that got shot in the temple? Or I'm so confused with all these historical facts. God. Anyway, it was like in the 1980s or something. They used to have bottle redemption centers. Do you remember those? Millennials, you weren't even born yet, so shut up. God, you people don't stop talking. They had these little places that you would go to. There was one in every town and city, and it was a bottle redemption center. Redeem yourself. I will find redemption in my bottle center. I will be redeemed. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord, take my bottles back, oh, Lord. What you would do is you would have a separate container in your house and all the empty bottles. You'd have to wash them out. Let's be clean with our garbage. And then you would take this large bag of bottles down to the bottle redemption center. You put it in the trunk of your car, these smelly old milk bottles and all the bottles and bottles and bottles and bottles. And you bring them down there, and there would be a person there who would take your bottles from you, count them out, and then give you money. They would give you 5 cents a bottle back, I believe it was. I don't know if it was 1 cent or 5 cents. My memory isn't that good. They would actually give you cash or send you a check or something. But those bottles, because when you bought a bottle of pop or soda, whatever you call it, you would pay 5 cents extra. So Actually, you were just getting your money back. Some people thought, well, I'm making a fortune here with these. You already paid the money. What are you talking about? You're just getting your money back. What are you talking about? But the idea was, well, I bring my bottles down to a place and they give me cash. This is a business. Oh, God, please. And it turned into a business for people who lived on the street. They would find a shopping cart somewhere in front of a supermarket, and then they would comb the town for people that threw their bottles away. To them, it was a business. They got up early and did this. And to be honest with you, when I saw that happening, I thought, oh, okay, this is good. Entrepreneurs. I'm kidding in a way, and in another way, I'm not. Bottle redemption. Do they have that anymore? They do. Do people use it? They don't. Yeah, we don't. We just give people bottle. You know, when the recycle truck comes there to pick up the recycle bin, we just throw the bottles in there. I don't want money from you. I don't want money from you. 5 cents used to be a lot. Now it's like, whatever. Keep your 5 cents here. Here's your tip. Here's 5 cents. Thank you. Thank you very much. But I remember the bottle redemption centers, and I remember as a kid, I thought that was like, whoa, what a scheme to make millions of dollars. Come on, seriously. Now it's like, all right, whatever. Everything's recyclable, but, you know, it's sad. You look at the oceans and all the dead fish there's plastic in everything. There's plastic in our bodies. Did you know that? Oh, my God. Seriously, do I have to make this a fact of the day? I think I do.
Ladies and gentlemen, please prepare yourselves. It is that time again for Ron's Fact of the Day.
Here's a fact, there's plastic in your body. Oh, come on, Ron, don't be stupid about this. I don't put plastic in my body. You don't, but there is. Plastics seep into the food and the liquid in which the food or the liquid is contained. Yeah, that plastic, it seeps into the food source. It seeps into everything. We are a society and a world of freaking plastics, and you can't avoid it. They are everywhere. And I'm talking about everywhere. If you bent over right now and stuck your hand in your butt, similar to a proctologist for an annual exam, a bottle would come out. There are plastics in your body as we speak. Microscopic, yes. But we've learned to, our liver is just going, our liver is basically saying every time something's ingested, let's divide the food and the plastics. They do that. Your liver's like a recycling center. But this is the way it is, man. Nobody talks about this. There's little plastics in your body all the time. I know, it's kind of sad. Do you need a talk show host like me to tell you this stuff? No, you don't want to hear this. You don't want to hear this. You want to know where the next beer is. You know, you don't care. You don't care. We've lived with this for most of our lives, and I don't know, whatever. Anyway, I have an interesting show for you today. I have a guest coming up a little bit later in the program. I keep the guest in a box in the back room, and I let the guest out when it's time. That's the only way I can keep a guest active for this program, is to seclude them and not tell them really what's going to be happening. Ron, thanks for inviting me on your show, but I don't understand. Why am I in a box in a room? You'll see why. Anyway, thank you very much. Thank you. Anyway, recycling, man. Yeah, it's recycle day. It's a garbage day again for me. I went to the Museum of Fine Arts. I live in the Boston area. Thank you. No, please sit down. I live in the Boston area, and I like to go to museums because I like to go to places where they keep things, and I can go to them and gawk at what they're keeping. I think that's fun. I don't know. It's not fun. You walk into a museum and you gawk at the pictures. Oh, look at the picture that this person did. Look at the picture this person did. You can do the same thing in the supermarket. You can walk down the aisles. Look at the can of tuna fish. Ooh, look at that can of tuna fish. Ooh, is that spaghetti sauce? Whoa, that is. Look, dear. That's spaghetti sauce. You can do it in the supermarket. It's not as fascinating, but you can do it. So I go to the Museum of Fine Art, and it's fine. It was the first time I had been out in a real public place since this big thing started a little over a year ago, and you know the thing I'm referring to. So it felt like almost normal again. Sure, I had to wear a mask, but so do you when you have to rob a liquor store. So, you know, it's not a stretch. So I'm walking in there, and they had an exhibit with the paintings of Monet. Now, I don't know if you millennials know what Monet is. It's not the French word for money. Excuse me, but I'm a little short of the cash. Can you lend me some Monet? I used to do that in school. I was the class clown. I really went too far because I wore the makeup and the big shoes and the red nose. Yeah. Anyway, so I was a class clown. And in French class, I used to be the class clown. And the teacher would say, oh, Mr. Van Damme, give me a French phrase. What if you wanted to go to the library? How would you say that in French? I would say, I have to go to the library. All you do is add onto everything, and it sounds like you're speaking French, but you're not, and that's really not what you do to speak French. I believe library was bibliothèque. I could be wrong. I have no idea. That's where French class got me, where I can say words, but I'm not sure if they're the right ones. All those years, all those hours in a classroom, and I walked away with virtually nothing. So Monet is not money. That was the guy's name, Claude Monet. Claude is what a lot of French people name their children. You don't find a lot of Claudes in the United States. The only place you'd find a Claude maybe is in the Blue Hills of Virginia, near the bibliothèque. Claude would be in a log cabin with a 12-gauge shotgun, or a 6, or maybe a 20-gauge. That would be Claude. Very different than a Claude in France. Claude in France would own a company, be eating kumquats and escargot. Very different. So Claude Monet, and he looked like an artist. I have a picture of him here. Look. See, I know he does look like an artist, doesn't he? So I was looking at the works of Claude Monet, and everybody's heard of Monet, they just don't know it. So his early paintings, the ones that he got up at 6 o'clock in the morning to do, they were fantastic. He has, I don't know the name of the painting, but it's a city street, I think in France, I would assume. But it's, you saw the afternoon shadows on the street and off the awnings and on the people walking down the street. It was a fascinating, fascinating painting. And then I saw the later works of Claude Monet, and it's like, why did he continue bother painting? Because they started to suck. Everything was out of focus all of a sudden. And I think that's what impressionists do. Except for Rich Little. All right, millennials don't know who Rich Little is. Oh my God, this is where we have to part company. All right, here's your test for today. Do you know who Rich Little was? I don't think he's alive anymore, but do you know who he was? He did impressions of famous celebrities. Have you ever heard of Rich Little? If you haven't, we have nothing to talk about and nothing in common. I mean, I'll still have sexual desires with you, but I will not. I will not discuss anything. Anyway, there you have it. So I'm going through the museum. I'm looking at Claude Monet's later works, and they all seem out of focus. And this is what the Impressionists did. Apparently, all the Impressionists who did paintings back in that time period, which like was the mid-1800s to the very early 1900s, very, very early, 1910, something like that, they apparently started to lose their eyesight. And I guess if you're painting, you start to lose your eyesight. I think that's what a good painter does. Vincent van Gogh said, oh, the hell with this painting. I'll just dab little paintbrush strokes on a canvas. The hell with this. I've already... I believe Van Gogh cut his ear off or something. I don't know. He lost an ear, or was that Beethoven? All these artists just losing body parts and losing their eyesight. It's just like, whoa, I ain't painting. That's it's possible. It's just very possible, and I don't know for sure. I was talking about plastics in our body at the beginning of the program. Do you remember when that was? Seemed like a day ago, didn't it? But it was less than half an hour ago. I believe that artists, painters, not house painters, but artists back in that time period, they were using probably oils and enamels and all kinds of strange paints, leaning over a canvas and inhaling these toxic fumes from these heavy lead-infested paints. I don't know if there was lead in them, but there was something that was toxic. And they would spend all day and hours and days with their faces basically just dug into these canvases. And I believe it destroyed these painters. I believe it did. They spent all this time in their studios, which was just probably a gangbang of paint fumes. And some of them started to lose their eyesight. Some of them lost their ears. I think someone lost their arms, which makes it very hard to paint. Very hard to paint. It can be done. But I was looking at some of these paintings, and I said to myself, these are not paintings. These are somebody who just took a paintbrush and started just like putting little sloppy strokes on a five-year-old. Here's the difference, man. Here's the difference. Rembrandt, Monet, if there's a painting if there's a paint splosh on a canvas and Monet or Rembrandt did it, it would sell for millions of dollars. If you took your five-year-old child, gave him a paintbrush, and they threw it up against the canvas, wouldn't be worth very much, would it? Be worth nothing. The parent wouldn't even want to keep it. If Monet did that, $1 million. What a franchise, man. What a franchise he had. Franchise is not the proper word, by the way. Anyway, so that's what I did yesterday. I went to the art museum for a few hours in order to frustrate myself. Like, why are these paintings on the wall? Half of them suck. They really do. I mean, and there are these people off the street. See, in Boston, there are people like this. They're art aficionados, and they stand there and they stare at a painting for hours. And I feel like walking up to them and tapping them on the shoulder. Well, you're not supposed to touch people these days. But I felt like tapping these people on the shoulder saying, excuse me, your head is up someone's ass. I think it's Monet's. Why do you find this so fascinating? What is with you? Do you feel important? Do you feel significant if you get involved in a painting that really is not that great?
Oh, but Mr. Van Damme, it is great. It is a masterpiece.
A masterpiece? I can't even see it. It's all out of focus.
Well, it's the way the masters interpret it. It's impressionism. Very similar to Rich Little. Are you familiar with Rich Little, Mr. Van Damme?
Oh, my God, yes, I am. Now I understand. I don't know. Anyway, I do have a guest coming up shortly in the program. Not a short guest necessarily. Shortly in time will that guest arrive, is what I was referring to. On every program, before I do continue, at some juncture, I like to make believe that I care about your life. I do this on every show. It works. It works because a lot of people buy it. You know, they say, oh, I like Ron Van Dam's show. He actually cares about his audience. And it's so stupid, but that's what they think. So as long as I can keep that, you know, ball rolling, I'll do it. So how are you? Oh, my God, how are you? How are you feeling? Are you feeling okay? Are you all right? Oh, my God. Are you happy at least? Do you have some form of happiness in you? See, I'm making believe that I care about you. It's very effective, but I don't. Seriously? There are people that do care about you. Don't get me wrong. There are people that really care about you. They're obsessed with caring for you. Why do we all have to do it? Why does everybody have to care for you? Okay, fine. All right, we're going to take a short commercial break. And when we come back, I know what you're thinking.
Give the gift that says, I love you. The gift that says, happy birthday. The gift that says, get well soon. The gift that says, you're the reason I went into the priesthood. The gift that says, congratulations on not getting indicted. The gift that says, I want to cover you in warm chocolate pudding. The gift that says, good luck in clown college. The gift that says, thanks for removing my unsightly wart. The gift that says, sorry about giving you food poisoning. The gift that says, I'll see you in hell. The gift that says, remember the good times we had in prison. The gift that says, I want to make sweet love to you on the white sand beaches of Rio while your hot cousin watches. The gift that says, thank you for the kidney. The gift that says, you deserve all the best, but this will have to do. The gift that says, thanks, Jesus. Whatever you want to say, you can say it beautifully with a timeless gift from Phyllis Gorman's House of Macaroni Art on Route 94 just past the Rotary, across from Sweaty Palmer's Adult Emporium.
Jeff Ehrman joins us now. He's editor-in-chief of Lawn Starter, and you'll find out what that's about in just a second. Hi, Jeff. How you doing today?
Doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much. We're talking about a crazy little thing called cannabis. For those that have been living in a cave for the past few years, that's become legal in many states. Where does it stand now, Jeff?
We've got 16 states where it's legal, mm-hmm. and then it's going to possibly be additionally approved in 4 more states, possibly through the end of the summer.
Wonderful. And it's created some industries and small businesses, and that's been wonderful as well. You know what's funny about this, Jeff, before we get into it, there's a city in the next town to us that has about 5 dispensaries. And I thought when these things started that there'd be lines around the block. It's not like that. It's just like any other business. It's just normal. And I'm a little bit shocked in that sense.
I think people are used to it after a while, and they've got their regular sources where they're getting it before it was legal. So yeah. Sometimes they go to those same places, but sometimes they're going to try something new, and you can do that at a dispensary if you want to do it that way.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Well, where is I know that there's a study that Lawn Starter has been doing about the best cities in order to find this particular product. How does that fall? How has that been going?
Well, the thing is that it's not really a big surprise. Denver, which was first with all this, yeah. is the, you know, it's called the Mile High City, and it turns out that that's actually your number one ranked city.
And oddly enough, it wasn't that the name for that city is not from the cannabis.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Where does, now we're located in the Boston area here, and we cover New England in a very prominent sense. Where does that area stand?
Let me just double check that here for all one right. second. And Boston is ranked at number 8 of our list of the 94 cities in America where it's legal and a big deal.
Interesting. Yeah, again, nothing really spectacular as far as I'm seeing lines around the block or things and that kind of thing. Well, that's good. Now, how are these changes doing economy-wise? Are they affecting the economies in these areas?
It's helping in terms of people coming to those states because you're interested in those things and you can do it there. Like Las Vegas, it's just another reason to go to Vegas is because you can actually do this recreationally and legally. And it also helps with the taxes for those states. So I think that's probably why a lot of states are looking at it is because of what's going on with COVID and costs, and they're looking for new revenue streams. And this is one way to be able to do that.
Are many of the states falling on board with this because of the success of it in the states that do allow it?
Yes, that's where they're following the lead of the other states where it's worked. And it seems to be a way that they can manage it and grow it and also wind up growing their income.
Interesting. Okay. Now, some people are confused about the legalities of this. It's legal to drink alcohol, but you can't drive with it, et cetera. What are people understanding or misunderstanding about the legalization of this?
You can do it, and it's recreational, but you can still get arrested for driving under the influence because under the influence includes alcohol, it includes pot, it includes all the other things that you can be, you know, and wheel on starter. You know, I track these things about people on lawnmowers getting, you know, mowing their lawns intoxicated.
Yeah.
You know, it's just crazy stuff that people do. Don't go overboard with it. Just, you know, if you're going to do it, just do it with restraint.
It's funny because I grew up in New York City, and back in the 80s there, in the late 70s, you could walk through Central Park smoking a joint, and the police officers would just pass you by and not even pay attention to you. They knew that people were doing it.
Right.
I guess that was just like a foreboding of what was going to go on in the future.
Absolutely. And I moved to Dallas from Austin, and Austin's the same way. They've got more pressing things to worry about than people smoking. And in the case of Texas, you know, I mean, there's just, we're not one of those states that has any of this legal.
Yeah.
But in particularly Austin, you can do it, and there's hardly any penalty.
Exactly, yeah. Tell me about Lawn Starter.
Lawn Starter cares more about your grass on your lawn than it does about the grass that you smoke. But, you know, we're trying to, you know, make some tie to what people are thinking about as we head into 420.
Yeah.
But Lawn Starter is basically, we'll mow your grass, we'll do everything out in your yard, and, you know, we make it easy to just punch your app and get the service done with a pro.
Interesting. Let me ask you a question about that, if I may, because it's springtime and people are, you know, getting into this now. Is it better to have one service do everything for your lawn maintenance, or like this company will do my fertilizing, this company will do my mowing, how does that fall?
Well, think in terms of your cable service or whatever you use with streaming services. The more you can bundle, the more you can save.
Yeah.
So if you have somebody who you trust to be able to do that fertilization and that aeration and dethatching and all the other things that you need done around tree trimming, whatever it is that you've done, if you have one place that'll do it all and you trust them, you're probably going to save money in the process.
Okay. There are a lot of people, I mowed my own lawn like forever until I got old enough and I said, I'm not doing this anymore. And now I've it feels good to have your property look nice. Is it worth it for people to check it out, even if they're financially not, you know, thinking they're able to hit this?
Absolutely, because what it does is it gives you some time back, whether, you know, if you don't enjoy mowing the lawn and you can afford to have somebody do it for you, whether it's the kid down the block or whether it's a service like Lawn Starter or one of the other ones that are out there, you know, it gives you time back. And at the same time, you can just wind up watching somebody mow it instead of yourself.
Interesting. Okay.
And you don't have to worry about, you know, any sort of crazy things like, you know, people mow their lawn in bare feet. That's the goofiest thing to do.
Ouch,
it's unsafe.
Ouch.
You know, let somebody do it. Leave the responsibility to them, like Greyhound. Leave the driving to Greyhound.
I'll tell you a horrific story very, very quickly. When I was mowing my own lawn when I was a young adult, and I thought that was good exercise, the grass would get wet, and every once in a while, the lawnmower would kind of seize up a little bit. So, And I got lazy and I decided I'm not going to turn the mower off. I'll just like kind of clear it out from the shoot area. And I nearly took my finger off. It nicked my finger. Fortunately, it wasn't horrible. But that from that moment on, it's I ain't doing this myself anymore. It was a lesson.
Right. Let somebody else do it. Let them take the risk. That's the smart way to go.
Well, I think they know what they're doing more than me is the point. Okay. All right. How do we get in touch there with Lawn Starter if someone was interested?
LawnStarter.com is the website. There's also an app, so there's ways that you can find us. Very easy, one-touch, book your lawn service, and you're good to go.
Wonderful. Well, it's an interesting way of approaching this, I must say, Jeff. In one sense, it's not good to have weeds. In another sense, it's not so bad.
Right. And we take care of the weeding too, so you know, it's just smart to be able to know what you're doing.
Okay, very good. Hey, it's a pleasure speaking to you, Jeff. Thank you so much for your time today. Well, you have been fantastic as usual. You have been so patient and kind. I know you're just itching to get those bottles down to the redemption center, and they're open all day, so it's not a big deal. I really didn't make it a problem for you. It's not my intention. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. Oh, yes, I will. You may not be here, but I'll be back tomorrow with a brand new show. And until then, well, how are you, by the way? You doing okay? You doing all right? I know. I wish you peace. We'll be right back.